Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Happy to have you with us. Listen, I'm going to shift gears, which is what we do on this program. Anything financial, and you know what else is tied into the financial world? In fact, it's inextricably linked to financial planning, and what you do is the whole area of wills, trusts, probate administration, estate planning, all that good stuff. So we're going to talk about it on today's program. And guess what? I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on TV. I don't pretend to be one. So we've got a special guest in the studio, not just on the line, but in the studio. Ray Donadio is a local law practitioner, and I'm going to introduce Ray a little more fully, but let me welcome to the program. Ray, welcome.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you, and this is your first experience on radio.
Maiden voyage.
Okay, no pressure, Ray. No, I'm glad to have you. I've done some work with Ray, and I know him to be a very capable attorney. Now, let me give a little proper introduction of Ray, and we'll get into some of the topics we want to get to. I get a lot of questions, as you know. We've talked about this. I get a lot of questions when I do a seminar or just in the course of working with my clients. A lot of questions about wills, trusts, all this stuff. It's really top of mind for a lot of people.
It is. There's a lot of misconceptions out there based upon other people's bad experiences.
Yeah. So let's get into that. Ray's practiced for 34 years. That's a lot of time, Ray. 30 years in Ohio and in Florida since 2010. He practices primarily in the estate planning area, including wills, trusts, preparation, probate, trust administration, real estate, and business and corporate law. And you've had your practice in Mid-Atlantic Florida Bar and practicing Donadio Law Office, which is in Port Orange, since 2008?
That's correct.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. So you come to us with a lot of experience. I know you worked in Ohio a long time. You just wanted to get down and enjoy some of our warm weather?
Temperature and taxes, David.
Temperature and taxes. That's good. All right. Well, we're glad to have you here, and we're going to make the most of this time with Ray. If you've got more questions for Ray or you'd like to look at what he's doing, you can go to his website, DonadioLaw.com, DonadioLaw.com, and you can get more information. So let's dive in here. You know, you mentioned before, Ray, that a lot of misconceptions, and I hear that. And so when I do seminars, and I know you do too, and we'll talk a little bit about that. When I do seminars, I ask people what their questions are. I use a similar format to what you do. I like to open it up and tailor my presentation to the audience. And it is remarkable that every time I start writing up the questions on the board, I have at least two or three questions that people want me to talk about, legal, trusts and estates and all that.
Right.
Now, I very quickly tell them that I'm not an attorney. As you know, I have a designation, Certified Trust Financial Advisor, where I've got extra training, but that still doesn't qualify me to practice law or even give them legal advice. But there's so many common misconceptions or just things that people are twisted up about. So it's really great to have you kind of debunk and clear that up for us. So if you want to start with maybe some of the basics, like the last will and testament, what's required, what happens if you die without it, some of the basics that we need to understand about that and why it's so important.
Well, very good. The most common question I get when I give a seminar is, if I die without a will, does the state of Florida get all my stuff? Mm. And of course, that's not true. In order to make a will, you need to have two qualifications. You need to be of sound mind, and you need to be over 18 years old or an emancipated minor.
Okay.
In creating a will, it basically does three things for you. It allows you to name an executor, or we call a personal representative.
Okay.
It allows you to name a guardian for any minor children that you might have or people that you are a guardian for.
Okay.
And it also then allows you to distribute your estate the way you want it distributed.
Okay. So it's instructions to your personal representative on how they're going to disperse. And is it true that you can, to some degree, control from the grave?
You can do that, but not with a will.
Okay, good. We'll get to the differences. Okay.
Good.
All right. Well, that's good. So that's the basic. You mentioned that the state of Florida doesn't get your money, but the state laws do then kick in to determine who gets what when?
Yes. Believe it or not, the state of Florida has already written a will for you.
Oh, that's convenient. Good.
It's called the Statute of Intestate Succession. And I have to keep it open because it's a little tricky. But if you die with a spouse, the spouse gets everything.
Okay.
If you die with a spouse and children, it's a little trickier. If you have children that are your children, yours and the spouse's, then the spouse still gets everything. if either one of the spouses has other children from a previous marriage or relationship, now the spouse is only entitled to half.
Okay.
If there's no spouse and only children, they get everything. And then from there it goes on. If there's no spouse and no children, then it goes to parents, siblings, aunts and uncles.
So it could be very, very removed from very. Maybe what you intended. What's the, just off the top of your head, have you seen it really go like third cousin, twice removed? Is it some sort of
interesting? Yeah. I have actually had a case where one side of the family did not inherit because they were too far removed.
Okay.
Beyond great-grandparents, there's a thing called the laughing heir statute, which says if you're too remotely related and there are more closely related people, you don't share.
Okay.
That was an unfortunate event for those folks, but there are.
This is complicated stuff.
It is. And then only if there are no relatives, then the state will take the property, they will sell it, and they will hold it for 10 years in order for someone to make
somebody
a claim.
Somebody might step forward, a creditor or a beneficiary.
Exactly.
Okay. And then if that 10-year goes up and...
Then it's the state's.
Wow. Now, yeah. I'm sure they put that to good use, Ray.
I'm sure they do.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm looking over there at that big, thick book you got over there. Is that the state statutes?
That is the statute.
Lord, book. That thing's like, for our listeners, you can't see this, but it's like, I don't know how you got that on my desk. It's like 6 feet tall. It's huge. Okay. So this is something, and again, I will tell you a little bit of... proper disclaimer. When I'm telling people about they need to talk, I tell them they need to talk to an attorney whenever they ask me questions about legal work. And some of the complexities that you describe is exactly why I know you would agree with me, but I'm very strongly opinion about this, that I don't like these do-it-yourself wills on the internet or you pick up the form at, you know, the office place. This stuff is complicated, and you really need the benefit of a legal advice to sort it all out.
You do, and particularly someone who focuses in estate planning, not just anyone, but an estate planning attorney.
Good point.
Yeah. There are also issues regarding what passes through a will. What is probate? That's the second
Great
largest question.
Question.
Mm-hmm. And very simply put, probate is a process. It's a process... that is an orderly way of disposing of your property after you die. Interestingly enough, there are two types of property when you die. Probate property and non-probate property.
Should I be writing this down? This is getting complicated. Hold on. All right. So you got the stuff that goes through probate is going to be stuff that is controlled by the will?
Exactly.
Okay. It's kind of like a marshalling of those assets or directing them through the probate process.
It is.
Okay.
The executor... or the personal representative, I still have the Ohio terms in my head.
Yeah, that's...
But the PR is basically charged with the duty of getting appointed first. That's their marching orders. When the judge issues their letters of authority, then they can begin
okay.
their work.
What happens? You as an attorney then would submit something to the court with the will saying, hey, here's David Holland. He's a personal representative for this person. They've deceased. And then there's some sort... That is like submitted... What is that called?
That's called the... petition to admit the will to probate.
Ah, okay.
And then the petition to ask the court to appoint the nominated executor.
Okay, very good. And then once that you get that back, you give that to me, then I've got my authority to collect assets, sell property, do all of that working with the attorney.
Right. And one of the big things I see when people do their own wills is they don't put the powers clauses in the will. Mm. The statutes give you some powers, but they don't give you all the powers.
Okay.
And let me say also... I'm talking, like you said, you always should seek the advice of an attorney, and the things I'm saying here are general and not necessarily
sure.
geared to any specific, individual, but if you
right.
have further questions, why, I'd be happy to, to answer them for folks.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Now, probate property is property that is owned by the decedent all by himself, with some exceptions.
Of course.
Life insurance.
Right.
It passes by beneficiary.
Okay.
Annuities. Passed by beneficiary.
So anything with a beneficiary designation.
Exactly.
Not subject to probate goes directly to the beneficiary.
Right.
Not controlled by the will either.
Not controlled okay. by the will. That's a big thing people don't understand. Transfer on death property, POD, payable on death
TOD
property.
And PODs.
Right.
Okay.
Those don't pass through the will.
Automatically that person's on the day of your death.
Right. You have a contract with the bank or the institution that says, when I die, this goes
It's there. So they go down, they prove who they are.
Right.
It's their property.
Right.
Okay.
Property that's held in multiple names. There are a couple of ways to hold property in multiple names. One way is called tenants in common, and one way is called joint with right of survivorship. If you own the property tenants in common, you each own an undivided half, or third, or however many there are, Your half passes through your will and is controlled by the will.
So even if you have 16 partners on a piece of property that you all own 1/16 of, you can leave yours to whomever you want through your will, and that goes through probate.
You leave it to your five heirs, and now you've got 21 people on the property.
Outstanding. That makes it fun.
Oh, it does. The joint and survivorship is a little different. With the joint and survivorship property, the person who dies, the other survivors automatically own it.
No probate. It's just as if the one who died had a life estate almost. They're out, and the other person, it owns 100% complete ownership.
Correct.
Okay. And there's another one I'm sure you would expect me to ask you about that we sometimes run into, is called tenants by the entirety.
Exactly. That's the third way. You are well read.
Well, listen, I know a lot of good attorneys.
good. Entirety is only for married couples.
Okay, so it's joint with right of survivorship for married couples.
It is, and there's one other feature, and that is that the property cannot be sought by a creditor of one of the owners for the debts of that owner.
So we're not just talking about a primary residence. We're talking about other property.
Any other property.
Okay, so because a lot of times people get it kind of mixed up or kind of twisted up in their head that whenever you talk about asset protection or protection from creditors, so the personal property or the personal residence, the homestead property, but you can have tenants by the entirety for another piece of property and then protect it from creditors, just one of them.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, if they incur a debt together,
then they're on the rack.
Okay.
This is going to create some great issues since January 6th with the advent of same-sex couples being permitted to be married here.
Yes.
The one question is going to be, if you were married legally in another state, say Massachusetts, in 2013, then you acquired property in 2014 here, and you weren't married, and then you, now as of January 6th, you are married, when is the date of that marriage? And that'll control whether your homestead property is entireties or not. That's a question we haven't answered yet.
I'm glad I'm not an attorney. It's coming up. Complicated. More stuff that's going to come. If you're just joining us, Ray Donadio is in the studio with me. DonadioLaw.com is the website. The offices are located. Donadio Law offices are located in Port Orange, Florida. Nice and warm here. And so we're going to grab a quick break. We'll be back with Ray to talk more about wills, probate administration, and trust. Stay right there.
Here's a newsflash. All financial advisors are not created equal. Some invest in their education by getting advanced degrees and professional certifications. Some don't. Some advisors get multiple licenses and offer a wide range of solutions. Some don't. Some advisors choose to be independent. Some don't. Some advisors disclose how they are paid and the fees they charge. Some don't. Please don't settle for a don't. Let me introduce you to independent advisor David Holland. David is a CPA, a certified financial planner, a personal financial specialist, and a chartered financial consultant. With 23 years financial experience, David offers a wide range of personalized solutions and discloses all fees in writing. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That nice, strong radio voice you're hearing in the studio with me is Ray Donadio. We're happy to have him with us. Donadio Law Offices in Port Orange. DonadioLaw.com, talking about wills, trust, probate administration. And we were just kind of talking through some of the joint ownership of property and the way these different things pass or don't pass through probate. And I know you want to get to trust because it's another area, Ray, that is just a huge area of misunderstanding. And I just recently did a seminar and I had a question about trust. I mean, it's really common. And so let's start with the basics. What's the trust look like? How does it work? What's involved? Is it go through probate? Does it not? You know, are there administration issues?
As a segue to the last session, yes, this is the last kind of property that doesn't pass through probate.
Okay.
If it's in trust, it won't pass through probate. The trust sets the rules.
Does that make it private?
It does.
And that's one of the considerations for probate, right? Is it's open information.
Right. Now, a lot of folks think that everybody's out there looking at your documents at the clerk's office, and they're not really, but for celebrities.
Yeah, if you're famous, sure, but if you're just infamous, no.
Right. Even the infamous sometimes.
That's true.
There are two types of trust, though. There's a testamentary trust, which is inside of a will. Generally, you see that when you want to have property going to your children, but you don't want them to receive it until they get to be a certain age.
Okay, so it's created at your death by your will.
Exactly.
Okay.
You can't do anything with it before that time.
Okay, there's nothing in it.
Right.
Okay.
The living trust is the one that avoids probate. And the common mistake that folks make is they create a living trust and they never fund it.
Yeah, but it's in this nice, beautiful binder and you put it up on the shelf. It looks really good. You know, you paid the attorney. It's gold plated.
Right. And then they didn't fund it. And, and the next attorney has to say, well, you have to go through probate and trust administration.
Nice.
Bad.
Yeah, not good. So, okay, let's get to an obvious question because I get this a lot too, Ray. And I always have to defer this because I don't quote attorney's fees, but one of the questions people ask me about are costs associated with wills versus trust. Is one cheaper? Is one less expensive? Probate versus trust administration?
Excellent. Excellent question.
Start with, if you would, and you can use right here in our community, which of course it will vary. We have listeners all over the country, but it will vary according to what county, what state, wherever people are. But give us an idea of what it costs, probate or administration, just from the court standpoint.
There are two. There's administration, whether it's probate administration or trust administration.
Okay.
They both have to be administered.
You're still going through there.
You still are. You're still preparing an inventory. You're still notifying the creditors. You're still notifying the beneficiaries. You're still making an accounting of what you've spent and what you've paid out and what you are distributing. The court is involved when it's probate, and so the fees are a little higher. By statute, the fees are reasonable. They have to be reasonable. But the statutory scheme says that if fees are no greater than 3% of the first $1 million administered, then it's reasonable per se.
Okay.
So if you have a probate administration, 3% of the property.
Okay.
When you're doing a trust administration, you don't have the court involvement, so it's less cumbersome.
Is it 75% of the 3%?
Exactly. 2.25% of the first million.
Very good.
So you can quantify the savings in expenses.
Now, those are the costs associated with the persons involved with helping the attorneys or other folks.
Those are the costs. Those are the attorney's fees and the trustee's fees or executor fees.
Okay.
The court costs.
Are they that significant?
$1,000 maybe.
Okay. That's what I was looking for, is kind of an order of magnitude, because people are all worried when they ask me about probate. Like, it's so expensive. I'm like, it's not, the court costs, I was thinking, is not that much, a couple $1,000s, but the other costs can be higher.
The administrator, for the people who are administering it and helping the executor. Okay. And so you take the size of your estate and then you look at the 75 basis points that you're saving. And then you look at the cost of the trust versus the cost of the will. And you can at least quantify the savings of future dollars.
Okay.
And that's what people like to.
And that's assuming that basically the trust and the will are going to accomplish the same thing. And I'll tee this up for you because this is a huge topic that I often get involved with, Ray. And I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about it. And that is what a trust can do for you both during your lifetime. And then after you pass, it can do a lot more than a will can.
Exactly. It first of all, the big thing people hear is it minimizes or eliminates federal estate tax. that is true if your estate is greater than $5 million.
Yeah, what's the current exemption amount?
It's $5 million and some change.
Yeah, 5.3, 5.4, right in there. Okay.
Right. Of course, with the portability laws now, and
it's double, right?
The spouse is being able to take a spouse's unused share. It's $10 million,
and so unless you have a $10 million in excess estate taxes or inheritance taxes, at least in states where they don't have a separate inheritance tax,
right?
You're good.
You don't. The trust is not going to minimize or eliminate any federal estate taxes.
Okay, good.
And that's important to know that, because a lot of people try to sell, not by saying that, but by implying it. The other thing that a trust does, though, is it allows you to control property from the grave. Instead of your beneficiaries receiving it, like right now on your death, can set rules for how it's distributed and what standards. The common IRS standard, the ascertainable standard, is health, education, maintenance, and support.
You guys call that the HEMS provision?
The HEMS provision, exactly. It also can protect spendthrifts in your family, people who can't hold on to their money. You allow them.
You've never run into that, have you, Ray?
Oh, my. Sometimes elderly spouses.
Yeah.
You know, the Bible salesman comes up and says, geez, your husband bought this before he died and didn't tell you it's gold gilded, and it's only $4,000.
Oh, Lord.
If you have to say, well, that's the trustee, well, that may prevent fraud or those sorts of things. Mm. Avoiding probate, of course, is one. And then the privacy aspect. Nobody except you, the executor, or the trustee rather, and the beneficiaries see that trust.
So that's not something that, even though the trust has to be, it actually is filed, or just the fact that there is a trust is filed with the court? Not the whole trust, is it?
No, a notice of trust.
Okay.
In fact, I tell my clients when I prepare them, even if the bank wants to see the trust when you're creating an account in the trust, you don't have to show them the trust. The dispositive provisions don't matter. They want to see the first page, the signature page, the powers page.
Okay.
And who's the trustee?
And this is why you prepare what's called a memorandum of trust?
Exactly.
Okay.
Certificate of trust, memorandum of
all
trust.
Ray's connecting all the dots for me today. This is
indeed.
Good. Okay. The court gets just a basically a notice or just a notice of trust saying, here it is. It's not, that's where all of that protection or privacy comes into play because nobody knows what's inside the trust.
Right. And the beauty of a living trust is it's amendable, changeable.
As long as you are competent, right?
And alive.
And alive. Okay. And it's also, besides being called a living trust, it's also revocable. So people sometimes refer to it as a revocable trust?
Correct.
Okay. Or revocable. I use the former. Right? It's just easier to say. But so that's, there's some, you, if you do a trust, you can change it later.
Exactly.
Okay.
Just like a will.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Very good. This is something that somebody should consider if their situation is such where those things are important to them.
Right. One area that I find here in Florida is we have a lot of residents who own real estate in other states. For them, a trust is necessary. Because without the trust, when you die, not only do you have to administer or start a probate here in Florida, but you then have to hire a lawyer in the state where the real estate's located and do what's called an ancillary administration.
That sounds like a lot of fun, Ray.
And a lot of money.
And that's for each state where there's property.
Exactly.
So if you've got 10 pieces of property in 10 states,
you're doing 10 ancillary administrations.
But if you have the trust, you potentially, and again, we're not going to, you know, make a specific comment here, but you could have all of those held by the trust and have one?
None.
Wow.
The only reason you'd open the Florida probate is so that you have an executor appointed to go to that new state.
Excellent. Very interesting. Wow. Good stuff. I'm forgetting that we're on radio, Ray. You just put me in school over here. I like it. Ray Donadio, ladies and gentlemen. He has Donadio Law Offices in Port Orange, and the telephone number, 386-763-5083, and the website, DonadioLaw.com. Quick break. We'll be right back with Ray.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Then maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? That's a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. Being a fiduciary also means that the advisor should recommend the products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance or investment company tells him he has to sell. So next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary?" The answer should only be yes or no. If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer is probably no. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That number again for Ray Donadio's office, Donadio Law Offices in Port Orange, is 386-763-5083, and it's DonadioLaw.com. Before we continue, Ray, I have to ask you this, because this is one of the things I think that, because of people's experience, having seen movies and television, and one of my favorite movies of all time, Brewster's Millions, that they have this conception that there is this big formal reading of the will. Everybody gets in these big leather-backed chairs, and it's in the attorney's office, and everybody finds out their take of the will. Does that really happen? I mean, talk about what really happens, because people kind of think they have imagined this process. So does that really happen with a will, and does it need to even happen with a trust, or is it required, or does each person just know what they get, and the rest of what everybody else gets? Is that, you know, debunk that a little bit for
sure.
Us.
Sure. Like any TV show, there is no reading of the will. There's no requirement for it, and quite honestly, people do expect that. I've been doing this 35 years. I've only had two or three where all the heirs have come in and the contents was a secret. Most of the time, you know what's in it. The executor generally comes to the lawyer, and it's a very transparent process. Mm-hmm. With a will or a trust, all of the beneficiaries receive copies of it, but it's done by mail, and there isn't any everybody sitting around the lawyer's conference room table. Now, so, I'm not saying it doesn't happen,
yeah.
But not in the practice.
Not a requirement. So,
right.
So if, let's say somebody has six heirs through their will, then the executor do they have to send them a copy of the will?
If they request it.
Okay, so they send them a copy of the will that if they request,
mm-hmm.
and so everybody knows what's going on. Now, of course, to be, you know, good practice preemptive.
I do that in every occasion.
Okay.
Because it is a transparent process.
All right, how about with the trust where people are getting different things and Is that a little different animal with sending the trust?
No, we send the trust. Now, interestingly enough, when you amend a will or a trust by codicil or by amendment, I sometimes recommend that folks just create a new one, because if you have an amendment, then you get to see the stuff that you've changed, and that may create hard feelings.
Okay.
So in those cases, you might want to just do a new thing if you're leaving somebody out or cutting their share. But in most cases, we just provide the trust for them.
With a trust, one of the advantages being privacy, what if somebody doesn't want people to know? Let's say, for example, they don't want each of the beneficiaries to know what the others are getting, unless they decide to get amongst themselves and talk. What if they want that kind of privacy? Can that be done? Or does it get hard?
It gets difficult. Okay. I've never had that request, but I would imagine that if I was representing a beneficiary, I would say, well, I really like to see the whole thing to make sure that I'm not mentioned elsewhere. My client isn't mentioned elsewhere.
Okay. So that's good. That's fair. It's good. It's, you know, and after all, at that point, there's...
It is what it is.
It is what it is. If it's done correctly, it is what it is.
Right.
All right. So these are the two big documents that are part of people's estate plan, the will and the trust. Now, I know, of course, there are other parts of good planning ahead, documents that are appropriate or important for people to do. What are some of the other things that these advanced preparation documents people should consider?
I consider these to be what I call the life planning documents.
Okay.
And those consist of a designation of a healthcare surrogate, also a living will, and a durable power of attorney, or what I call the business power of attorney.
Okay, so there's three key ones.
Three.
Okay.
And yeah, that with a will and or a trust becomes a package that is everything you need.
Okay. And so the healthcare surrogate is also it's a power of attorney for healthcare matters.
It allows your healthcare surrogate to sign consent forms, transfer you or admit you to hospitals or other healthcare facilities, get into your medical records, talk
okay.
to physicians.
So healthcare surrogate is somebody stepping in, making decisions on your behalf.
Only if you're incapable.
Okay, good. Good clarification. And the purpose of all these decisions is to make you better.
Right.
Right. Because
right.
the advanced directive, that is...
That says, if I'm in a persistent vegetative state, terminally ill, or in an end-stage condition, and two doctors say I'm not going to recover from this, then don't keep me alive artificially.
Okay, so healthcare surrogate, keep me alive, I've got a chance. Advanced directive, I don't stop. Enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the financial power of attorney is really interesting
Very
to me.
Very key.
It is a document that it works until you die, because
Correct.
It ceases at death, right?
It ceases at death.
That's when the will or trust take over.
Right.
Okay. And what a lot of people don't realize, and this is why it's so important for them to get good legal advice and be careful who they pick, you're giving somebody a lot of power.
Tremendous amount of power.
I mean, you're kind of creating a clone of yourself.
You are, and you don't even have to be incapacitated to have it operate. Prespringing power is eliminated under the 2011 rewrite.
So it's just you either give them the power or you don't.
Or you don't.
So right. they could literally go down to the bank with that power of attorney and withdraw from your account.
They could. And then they'll get sued by the rest of their siblings.
But of course.
It's possible.
But these are important considerations. All right, Ray,
yes.
You know what? We need more time. We'll have to do this again. Ray Donadio, ladies and gentlemen, Donadio Law Offices in Port Orange, DonadioLaw.com. And that number again, 386-763-5083. Ray, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure.
Glad to have you, and we'll do it again. We'll set something up.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.